Okay, I think we're good.
Yeah, it looks like mine's recording too this time, which is good.
Perfect.
So is everything okay? You got a hoodie on. Are you good?
I'm good. It's cold over here, man.
Is it really? It's cold here too.
I mean, it's way colder there.
It's like in the 20s here.
Yeah, it's like 45 here.
Oh, that's still bad though for Texas.
I agree. It's very cold.
Well, I hope everyone's okay.
Yeah, we're good.
No canceling school or anything?
Only in Laredo, Bozeman, right?
Yeah, it's a hard place to live. it's like in the desert, you know, like where it gets really cold at night but really hot in the daytime.
I guess so. I love Laredo, man. Every time I go there, you know, the cello band has played there like 3 times.
Oh, really?
And the audience is like always one of the best audiences that we play for.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I can't wait to go for the festival we're going to do down there. Looks like that's happening.
I think so, although I didn't sign the paperwork from
Bozeman.
Oh,
no.
Did you?
I did, actually. I filled out all the paperwork while you guys were out at the bar there that night.
I told him to send me it via email. But
yeah, that's what I said that too.
He wasn't too excited about that for some reason.
Well, and there were several pages that you had to use the computer for anyways. There were a bunch of pages that were like, you know, please go on this website and fill out this form. So it seems like that would be an okay way to do it, but I guess I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Dude, how are you recovered from PASIC? I mean, what is it, Tuesday now, right? So a couple days back.
Yeah, I think so. I sort of took it easy on Sunday and Monday. I didn't do anything. I just hung out with the family.
Yeah.
Went out to dinner last night with Amanda and Henry.
Nice.
And, you know, when I walked into the house, Henry was sort of playing on a little mat in our living room floor.
Yeah.
And I walked in, and he looked up at me. In like 3 seconds, he just looked at me. And then he had, like, the biggest smile on his face and was so happy.
Yeah.
Took him a second, you know.
To remember, of course.
Yeah, just, like, to realize that I had been gone and that I was back.
Yeah.
And then he was just super stoked about life. It was awesome.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, my kids are excited too. They were jumping around and knocking things over and all the sort of things. They're good. Like they do that every day, but it was especially active.
That's awesome. So
very good.
How was your PASIC debut, Aaron? How did you feel?
Man, it was so fun. I loved it. I mean, I guess for those of people who don't know or maybe who weren't there, so your band, The Big Trouble. It got expanded by what, about 15 members?
Yeah, a lot of people.
For that concert, and we played a concert right in the middle of the day on the first really big day of PASIC, which I thought, like, I guess first and foremost, that was kind of the cool thing to me because, you know, everybody kind of had to stop and there wasn't a lot of other stuff to go to besides our concert, which I thought was really sweet.
Yeah.
So people almost, not like they had to come, but I feel like there wasn't a lot of other choices.
Well, you know, it's interesting. PAS, I spoke with someone. I think it was Josh Simons, who sort of like is in charge of everything. Mm. And he said, you know, we wanted to do it in a way where the afternoon 2 p.m. shows would get a lot of people to come, like, you know, arrange the schedule in a way where a lot of people would meet up to go to that particular show, I think, or something like that. So I think it worked. We had a great audience.
I saw a couple of different social media posts that were giving, I don't know Josh Simons, but a couple of posts that were giving him a lot of credit for like kind of just whatever he did to make improvements at PASIC this year. And it did kind of feel different. Like I hadn't gone in a couple of years,
mm-hmm.
and I did notice that it felt a lot different this year, just like it seems like the stuff was a little bit more spread out. Like it wasn't as crammed in, you know, where you had to feel like you had to go to 6 different things at once. And I don't know, it also felt like it was less, I feel like I've walked around way more at PASIC, like trying to get back and forth to different things. Kind of seemed like it made a little more sense this year. I don't know, maybe that was just me, but.
Yeah, no, I think it was smooth, man. I got a chance to talk to more people this year. Which
yeah.
I think like is part of one of the most important parts about going to a convention like PASIC is just catching up with friends and, you know, making new friends, and I thought there was a lot of opportunity to do that.
Sharing ideas. Very important. Okay, so anyway, so back to the concert, right? So it was great, I thought. It was one of the, you know, really big house, a lot of people there. But I didn't feel like it was just so much fun. Like, I think the people in the group that we had and the way that we had kind of rehearsed and the way that we had all prepared, it made it feel like it was just a really fun opportunity to show people what we had been working on, you know, and what you had written.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a lot of credit goes to my bandmate, Drew Warden.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a couple years ago at PASIC, we sat down for a beer. And he said, "Hey, Ivan, I'm thinking about starting a big percussion band. Like, would you want to, like, join me in sort of heading up this project?" And 2 years later, you know, we're at PASIC playing for a lot of people and playing a really, you know, fun show. And I think a lot of that is attributed to Drew and just sort of his idea to get this thing going.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, like, if people are not following this as carefully as you and I, so you guys made a record, right, first? Or did you make videos first? I don't remember which came first.
Well, the very first thing we did was we made an EP, a 5-song EP, and then we made videos to correspond with that EP. But even before that, we signed up to try to get a grant through an organization called the Boston Foundation, which Maria Finkelmeyer sort of helped guide us through. And we got a big grant, and that sort of funded a lot of the stuff that we did the first year, like our EP and our music videos. And originally we wanted to do a big band, but we just decided to do it more low-key with just Drew and me. And then with Madeline McQueen, a songwriter out of Rochester, New York, we just decided to do the band on that kind of scale. Drew and I would record a lot of the different parts. Maddie would put her vocals on top from Rochester. And we sort of did this distance thing. And Drew and I did get together to record a couple songs together. And we actually recorded at the Break of Reality Studios in New Jersey with Patrick Laird, my bandmate from the cello band. And we just put out the EP. And I think the goal for the next year was to figure out a way to do the band in this larger scale format like Drew had originally thought about. And we submitted that to PASIC, and they took a chance on us, which I thought was really great.
And I remember, like, when the first time that I heard the EP, you know, you can tell it was, you guys were thinking about stuff differently, which I always, you know, I'm a huge fan of thinking about stuff differently and why do we have to use this type of mallets on this kind of instrument and et cetera, et cetera. But I think that that's been one of the cool things too, is to, and I think that was important for people at PASIC to see also, just that, like, you know, there's a lot of different ways that you can get sounds out of these instruments and a lot of different, I mean, even the format, right? Like, you didn't have guitar or anything like that. There was electric bass and drum set, but I mean, all those colors and stuff really just came from the sort of traditional mallet percussion instruments.
Yeah, it's really cool. Mallet driven sort of rock band or something. I don't know what to call it, but it's definitely percussion driven. And there was bass and keys and a guitar in one song that Sam Unn played. But not, that didn't drive the band at all. And I think you're right, like, the format of the concert, I think what we tried to do was make it very welcoming for the audience and to create sort of a community experience. And I had talked to Rob Honstein about that, actually, who's a really wonderful composer that I admire a lot. And I think he approaches his composing probably a lot different than what I do. But he thought that that community feel and engagement was really refreshing, and he really enjoyed the show, and that meant a lot to me because I really respect Rob a lot, and I heard from a lot of people that really enjoyed the concert. Todd Meehan just texted me last night and just, he had the nicest things to say, and shout out to him and his group too for playing PASIC and sounding beautiful and programming a very thoughtful concert. A lot of groups just go into PASIC and they'll just, you know, they're going to ram notes for 50 minutes and show you what they can do. But Todd's group didn't do that. They programmed music that they believed in, and I really appreciated that.
I think that I think I told you this story, but I felt so stupid after, because, you know, I've seen like some of Todd's stuff, like the Liquid Drum stuff is pretty famous now, and I've definitely watched those like in the past, but it's been a while. And so we were standing there after the concert, and only a few people kind of came backstage, like behind the curtain or whatever. And I should have realized that, you know, like it was probably they were important people that were able to come back and talk to us. But I stupidly, like, I don't know, I wasn't thinking about it. And since I'm not as in tune to that world, he introduced himself, and he didn't say, like, I'm Todd Meehan from Baylor, or like, I'm the guy from Liquid Drum. He just said, I'm Todd. But I was pretty sure that he said, I'm Tom.
With an M?
Yeah, with T-O-M. And I was like, hey, Tom, I'm Aaron. And then and then after, I was like, oh, wait, was that Tom Burritt? But it didn't look like Tom Burritt. And so I was, then I really confused myself. And then like 20 minutes later, I realized what I had done. And so, so if Todd's listening, I really apologize that I didn't recognize you. And whether your name is Todd or Tom, you're cool. So thank you for saying that. But that was a brilliant, and like, you know, one of my tricks is like I try to look at everybody's name tag thing, you know. Mm-hmm. But his wasn't on or wasn't out, so I had no chance. No, I just thought it was
knowing Todd, man, he'll love you even more for that.
Perfect.
Yeah, he's totally cool, and it was really nice to hear from him yesterday via the text message I got.
Yeah, but you know, like going back to the thing you were talking about Rob and just the overall thing, I think that at places like PASIC, it's so easy to get into like a, you know, chops fest, or like here's how fast or how clearly and cleanly we can play this. And in my own playing, I've always been somebody who's thought about like that not coming first, like having it be clean or having it be perfect or whatever. I mean, maybe that's like a defense mechanism for myself as a player, but I've always just kind of thought like that stuff's not as important as the gesture. And I remember like even being in school, and even I remember being in high school and having like the teachers say, oh, it's rushing a little bit, or it's dragging, or like, you know, somebody would turn on a metronome at the beginning of the tune and then turn it on at the end of the tune and we'd be 5 clicks faster or something. And I always felt like that was maybe okay, because there was so much more to it than that. You know, there was some emotion to it, or there was an attempt to convey something to the audience that maybe like just steady time didn't necessarily do. Mm-hmm. And I like that, you know, that I was a part of a thing that got recognized for not just for virtuosity, which there was plenty of up there, you know, but also for just like having an emotional impact on the audience. I think 10 times out of 10, I would rather have an emotional impact than be impressive, you know.
I totally agree. That's one thing that I always talk about, Aaron, when I go visit colleges and I hear people play music for me. Like, one of the first questions I ask is, what do you want people to feel when you play this? Mm-hmm. And what are you doing to make them feel that way, other than just playing whatever is on the page?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of school of thoughts in terms of composing. Like, should I write every single detail in the score so that this particular emotion comes across the same way every time? Or should I leave room in the score to allow the performer to add a little bit of themselves in it? And I guess it all depends. But either way, I think the goal of trying to perform music is to create some sort of connection with yourself, but also with people listening, right? And that's exactly what you're talking about.
Well, and even when you go back to like the old school, you know, like chamber music first being for just entertainment in people's homes and stuff like that, back to music history class, I think that's a big part of it. Or another one that I think of sometimes is shape note singing, where it's just like it's a sacred harp and that kind of stuff, where it's just super about the people singing together and mm-hmm. making music together. And even if they're not great, or even if they're not perfect, that's like totally far down the road for a lot of that frame of mind.
Yes.
And I think that's valuable, especially like I remember one guy came up to me after our concert, and he was a student at University of Kentucky. And I hope I'm not calling somebody out. I'm sure there's like a lot of students at University of Kentucky, so it could have been any of them. But he was talking about, he said, you know, that concert that you guys just played was so refreshing. He said, I've been having a hard time like being into playing lately. So I've been kind of like dark about wanting to practice and how things have been going and kind of feeling a little bit of burnout. And it was, he said it was really refreshing for him to hear what we had done. And I think that's a lot of it too, you know, but like if it was just about getting some emotion across and making a point, rather than just like having things be clean and perfect, you know, I think that that would be, maybe people would have a better time with things or just feel like less stressed out about it. I mean, it's a fine line, right? Because you want to play well. I mean, sure. I think that we all wanted to play as perfectly as we could, but yeah. not at the expense of emotional impact.
Yeah, that's totally right. And quite honestly, like, we didn't play perfectly.
No.
And that's okay, you know? Like,
yeah.
I think it's great. I think it's okay for people to see that you can play a good show and make a connection and not play perfectly and life still be okay, you know?
Oh, yeah. I think that's how I like to listen to music too. Like you're just talking about my Bjork poster.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like Bjork, and I think one of the things that I like about her music so much is that it's like super, it feels super raw. Like when she sings, it feels like it's directly from the heart. And even if you know, something cracks a little bit in her voice, or you know, something doesn't come out perfectly, like they leave it a lot of times. Or like, remember we've talked about this with the Beyonce record before on Lemonade, right?
Yeah.
Same deal, right? Like her voice like kind of breaks a little bit at one spot, and that's okay because it's emotional, right?
Exactly. And honestly, I think that's why we love working with Madeline so much, Maddie.
Because
she's a really like raw emotional singer, you know? She studied a little bit at Berklee in Boston for a year. But like she's just been on the road and she's been writing songs, and like her whole aesthetic and her whole musical sort of mindset is to connect, you know? And I think that's why she's so great for our band. She brings that extra little rawness and emotion that without words we might not be able to have quite as strongly, you know?
Yeah. It's great that that's important to you, mm-hmm. you know, because I think that people notice that when they're listening and when they're watching.
Yeah,
and I hope so. It comes across. I mean, and you know, like one of my very favorite moments was when we did Strive to Be Happy together, which is like you wrote this great piece, and I guess it was inspired by me sharing that poem with you. But I remember like reading the words to that poem when we did it in the rehearsal the night before. And I got like very choked up a couple times and thought, like, I was worried. I was like, how am I going to make it through this? People are going to think I'm soft, you know?
I almost choked up at the show, man. I couldn't even play the right notes. I was just like, this is beautiful. And
it was great. But, you know, my wife said something really smart, and I think that this was a cool thing, good advice. My wife teaches a great choral program here in Rochester where we live, and I said, I just texted her the morning of, and I was like, man, I hope I make it through this, because there's, you know, the poem Desiderata is beautiful for a lot of different reasons, but a lot of it is so pertinent to today's world, you know, where it talks about like, you know, in spite of all the sham and drudgery and broken dreams out there, it's still a beautiful world. That's like one of the final lines. And mm-hmm. like when you get to that part in the text, you're like, God, you know, it's just gone through all these things that everybody thinks about, you know, your career and what it's like to fall in and out of love. And it just hits all the marks. And then it gets to the end and it's like, you know, despite whatever else, here's where we're at. And I was afraid I was going to like get, and you know, like if you do get emotional about something that you like, sometimes you can't get it back together. And I was like, God, sure. You know, I think even like a Bozeman or somebody was like, try to make sure you don't ruin the whole concert. You know, I was like, yeah. But Sarah had great advice. She said, when you perform, the performance really isn't for you as the performer. The performance is really for the audience. And so, to, you know, to set your own emotions aside is really important so that that stuff doesn't overwhelm, and really so that the audience can feel the maximum impact. And
sure.
That advice really got me through that moment.
Because, no, that was you were awesome, Aaron. And we ended
so fun.
Right together, man. How I sort of envisioned that to go. Like, I play the last note, and then you say, strive to be happy.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I've always thought about it. And I talked to somebody after the show, And they were like, you know, that whole experience reading Desiderata, I say Desiderata, sorry.
Desiderata.
And playing the piece, I think it was somebody from Arkansas. They said it really sort of renewed my love for that piece of music and like wanting to do it again, but with poetry. And they asked if we had rehearsed it like to end like that. And I said, well, not really. Like last night we did it and it was different. At the rehearsal, and then we did it at the concert, and that's just the way it was. It was sort of meant to be.
I think. And a lot of that, I think, is just like when you play music together, you know, I feel like we listen to each other. You know, there's a lot of flexibility in the music of that piece, and certainly a lot of flexibility in the reading. And so I think we just listen to each other, and just like you would do in a chamber duet, you know, we just kind of tried to play off of each other. And I'm glad it worked out that way.
Me too.
But I think a lot of it has to do with just, like, we know each other. We've known each other for, like, 15 years or something, you know. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think so.
That was one of my favorite parts.
Me too.
What else stands out when you like listen, when you think back to that day?
Well, honestly, I think the band we played with and all the great people.
Yeah, do you want to talk about some of the
people? I want to talk about everybody for a quick second, if that's
okay.
Let's
do it. I'm ready.
Aaron, did you know everybody?
So I knew almost everybody a little bit. Well, I think the only, because most people had some kind of Eastman connection. So I think the only people that I didn't know, I had met Elliot before. But Gabrielle Meyer, I definitely
Gabriella.
Didn't know. Gabriella. And Ben Pitt, I met for the first time. I feel like that. I think that might be it.
Okay. Well, do you want to talk about some of the people that you know? And then I can hop in and talk about some of the people.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm going to have to get out the list here so that I remember everybody. I mean, obviously, I think for me, like the core of it, and maybe it's different, but the way I thought of it was like the May and PA crew was kind of like played a big part in what was going on. So, you know, like George Clements, who's been our pal since way back in undergrad, teaching in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania right now, has this really great percussion program out there. And he played a lot of the keyboard stuff, which I thought was cool. I remember like a long time ago, a little conversation that you and I had about like who should play some of the keyboard stuff or who can do it. And George is like a great pianist.
Yeah.
So that worked well, I thought.
I think so. And I was a little hesitant because I didn't want to him to come out to PASIC and spend a lot of time and getting ready and like just having him play keys, you know?
Right.
But he was like, dude, I would love to play whatever you want. And I think one of my favorite parts about the whole thing was George just being so joyful and so happy to play music with us. And I think in his town in Pennsylvania, he probably doesn't get to play music with a lot of different kinds of musicians and do a project like this. So like every time I'd look back at him, he's just grinning ear to ear and like moving to the music. And that made me feel really good, you know.
Did you see this picture? I don't know if you'll be able to see it. There's like PAS posted a picture. I'm gonna try to hold it up to the camera, but it's like, can you see this?
It's George screaming.
It's George
just about
screaming while he's playing marimba. That's a good shot.
That's
I didn't
awesome.
Even notice. Yeah, I just saw that one yesterday. It was funny.
That's cool.
So it was great to have him. You know, Mark Bozeman, who's teaching down at Texas A&M International down in Laredo. I always call him the world's greatest marimba player, which I think he still holds that belt, which is at least from one of the sanctioning organizations.
Right.
And Mark's just always, you know, he doesn't say a lot. He just kind of does an amazing job and is like a rock star with the music. So
yeah, absolutely.
It was great to have him there.
And he was texting me 2 months ago, like, these are the mallets I'm thinking about using for this piece.
And oh, yeah.
He was like ready to go. It was awesome.
Consummate professional, man. And like Drew Worden, of course, you know, he's another guy who's been in Pennsylvania with us before, and he's kind of one of the brains of the operation here. And I mean, Drew, you know, musically, he's fantastic, but also I was really impressed by how organized he was and how he, you know, ran a lot of the stuff. It felt like really smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think that makes sense because he's the dean of some kind of like program that does organizing things.
Yeah, right. He's a dean at New England Conservatory.
Yeah, something like that.
Pretty wild.
Yeah, but you know, I think he just always brings a ton of, again, like a ton of joy to what he's doing. And you know, it was fun to play with him on drum set a little bit at the end. He's a lot better drum set player than I think he lets people know about.
Totally. He's really good at drum set. He lays it down, yeah. Man.
Did you ever play that Knots duet with him, the hero?
No, you guys did.
Yeah, we did it once. It's awesome. I hope we record it sometime.
Yeah,
it's really
that's
good.
Awesome. And who else did you know up there?
I mean, Maria Finkelmeyer. We go back to some Eastman days, and she's out in Boston, like about to have a baby, which is really exciting.
Yeah, and like, dude, she was all in. You know, like she.
Oh yeah.
She could have not done the show. Obviously, I think she's probably 7 months along now. She's like, no way, yeah. I'm in, I'm doing this. She was there all night at rehearsal, standing up, sitting down.
Yeah.
Like, she was in it, man. It was awesome. And she brought so much to the show, too, I thought, man. She was great.
That's one of the things that I think is awesome about Maria is how she's... I never see her hesitating. You know, like, I remember back when I did the solo drum solo stuff, mm-hmm. and I was just asking people, hey, who would write a piece? And she was like one of the first people to be like, absolutely, I'll write a piece, you know. And she wrote a great piece that had some additional details, and she sent videos of how she thought it should go, and like super thorough and
awesome.
Just really, really super passionate about what she does,
yeah.
Which I think is awesome.
I think she's like kind of like a force in our industry, to be honest with you, because she's one of the few people like that isn't attached to academia. And is doing great art and great music, and that's not an easy thing to do. You know, she's doing it in a big city like Boston, and I think she's really dedicated her life to her craft, and it's really admirable. And I think she sets a great example for a lot of different people, both male and female, to know that you can do something with music, and you don't necessarily have to have it attached to a college.
Well, that's how I met Rob Hohnstein. Because he was she does this 2+2 concert series, and I'm not like totally sure what the 2+2 means, but I know it's like some different acts play. And so I was doing the solo drum solo, and then Jason Truding also did some solo drum solo stuff, some solo drum set stuff. And Rob was there too at that concert, because I think some of his music was played by one of the other people on the program. But like, it was in this kind of like old sort of warehousey sort of space in Boston, and it was a full house. I mean, they like packed I guess people know who Jason Truding is, but you know, I was just this guy coming in from Rochester to play some drum solos of all things, and it was full. You know, it was great. We had an awesome time. So yeah, she's really making a lot of stuff happen, and I love that.
I think so too. And you know, it was really special to play with Elliot Cole.
Yeah.
You know, Elliot's wife and my wife Amanda went to high school together here in Austin.
I didn't know that at all. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's super cool, and to see all the great things he's doing with his composing and music is special. And for him to like so openly embrace this project was just really awesome. It made me feel really special for him to be there. He's just got a warm spirit too, you know.
And he jumped right in on singing, like vocals, and like really well. I was
really
impressed.
Well, yeah, totally. I'm so happy that he did that, so I didn't have to do it.
You know, I had forgotten that you sang on some of that stuff, because it had been a while. I'll embarrassingly admit it had been a while since I listened to that first EP that you guys did, and I went to, after we had played, I was like, man, I like that Ariel song again. It reminds me of a Bjork tune for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I want to go listen to it. And then it was you singing. And I was like, okay, well, this is different than what I thought it was going to hear. But it was still very good, though.
Yeah, we had Maddie sing all the leads. And she was a trooper, man, because some of the songs probably weren't in the perfect range for her. But because they were already, like, orchestrated for percussion ensemble. And
yeah,
she was like, no, I'm going to do it. It'll be fine. And she did it. It was great.
She was great.
Yeah.
And trying to think of who else. So then, like, Sam played. You mentioned Sam before.
Sam's like a rock star, you know. I think he's the next one of the next guys to just sort of take over and have everybody know who he is. And because of two things, because he's so good at music, and because he's like a positive, beautiful person.
Yeah,
he is wonderful, man. And that was great to play with him. You know, he was on the premiere of Catching Shadows. many years ago.
At PASIC, right?
Yeah, at PASIC and at Eastman, even before that, like the PASIC prep. So there's a video online of the sextet version, and Sam's up there throwing
it
down.
I was at both of those concerts.
That's right. I was too. It was awesome.
In fact, I still have, I think they, you guys used one of my splash symbols, remember? And I still have it. I wrote on it. I wrote on the splash symbol at home. It was like Catching Shadows world premiere, so that I'll be like, I'll be able to sell it someday for thousands and thousands of dollars.
No, not at all.
That's so good.
Sam was great. And Stella Perlick. Stella's awesome, man. I met her at Chosen Veil Seminar, and she played one of the percussion parts to Space Junk.
Right.
And she just threw it down. And we've been emailing the last couple of days, but she sort of reminds me of you, Aaron. Like, she's really fearless about her music and about her decisions and how she goes about things. And I really admire that about you and Stella both, because sometimes I'm not as much like that sometimes. And I try to be. Really? I think you guys set good examples. For me, for people like me, sometimes I'm just too nice, you know.
Yeah, I guess so. She played on the Rough Compliance when we did it at Eastman, my drum set plus sextet piece, and she was, I remember meeting her then, like, she was playing one of the marimba parts, and same thing, like, very unassuming. She's very, very sweet when you meet her, and, like, you know, then all of a sudden it's just like musical crushing and destruction happening.
That's exactly laying it down, you know,
like locking right in there. So
totally,
that's great.
And Gabriella Mayer, who I sat in on her jury at Boston Conservatory like a year or two ago. I was in town doing Big Trouble stuff, and Doug Perkins texted me and said, "Hey man, I heard you're in town. Come sit in on some juries." And Gabriella is like one of the happiest people I know. She's super smiley and just like super great, you know, and she goes up there and just throws down De La Cluse like a beast. And I was like, well, I want her to play with me. And then when we did Big Trouble, we did a reading session at Boco, and Gabriella helped organize the whole thing, and she was so great to work with. I just thought she had to play with us too.
Gotcha.
And so did Drew. Drew loved working with her.
And then you met Ben Pitt from, like, he played some of your songbook stuff, right?
Yeah, Ben's actually he commissioned Songbook Volume 2.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he really helped create those. I met Ben at Chosen Veil, too, and he sang some songs, like some pop tunes, and it was beautiful. And during my master class, I was talking about using marimba, sort of a singer-songwriter instrument, like that's something I would love to do. Yeah. And we just connected over a bowl of cereal. And he said, "Could I commission you to write something?" And it's like, absolutely. So we had Fruit Loops, and we started hashing out an idea about a songbook. And that was it.
Is that all anyone eats at Chosen Veil, is cereal? Because that's all you ever really hear about.
Pretty much. No.
Is there also lunch, or is it just
there's
breakfast?
There's a guy, I believe his name's Danny. And Danny is the chef at Chosen Veil. And he cooks up some delicious meals. But cereal is a big morning treat. And there's also a cereal competition.
Yeah, I've heard about this too.
Yes, where you try to create your own sort of cereal creation using whatever ingredients are there, or maybe ingredients that you go by. But all of the faculty tries all of these cereals, and then we vote for, like, our favorite ones. It's really fun, actually, and sometimes kind of gross, because the ingredients aren't always, like, what you would want in cereal.
Right, yeah. But people kind of going for it, right?
Exactly. But Chosen Veil's like that. It's very much a community-oriented thing. It's a lot like what I hear Sosi is like. I've never been there, but I think Doug and the So Percussion guys try to create an experience that brings everybody together.
Well, I mean, there's other more great examples. I mean, we've been talking this whole time, and we keep coming back to the idea about, like, people who are nice and welcoming. And, I mean, I think you're exactly right. I mean, like, Doug Perkins is a guy who, like, I remember him, like, being around at Eastman, and I never really was sure, like, when or where. But he was, like, every once in a while he would show up, and, like, he was just so nice, like, so kind and supportive. And the same thing was true when I met Jason, when we did those drum set things together. Like, I mean, I don't know. I'm still getting going in whatever career it is that I have here. But, you know, I knew who Jason Truding was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't treat me like, you know, I was any less than he or anybody else. Like, he was so kind and, you know, like, just right off the bat, like, super friendly and sharing music and sharing ideas. And I just think that, you know, in the world, like, that's just so great, you know. And I work at a school, and sometimes people don't react that way to things, you know. Mm-hmm. People are like grumpy or frustrated, and I just, it's so much better when everybody's nice and open and just warm about things. And that is one of the things that made this such a success too, because you get up there with this group of people who, you know, I mean, a lot of them are old friends, but some of them weren't. And everybody just, I mean, George was talking about that too, like, everybody just playing together super nicely and having it be friendly and fun. And I think that's so, so beautiful to be able to play music that way, but also just to interact with other people that way.
I agree. You know, one of the best compliments I got was from a student who came up to me after the show and said, it looked like you guys all loved each other. Yeah. And I thought that was really sweet, because some of us hadn't ever met, but we sort of connected through this musical experience, you know.
Yeah.
So also the Lagan percussion guys who played Space Junk.
Yeah.
They played so beautifully, and I felt like it was important to you know, they're just fresh in their career, they're getting going, and I wanted to make sure and give them an opportunity to get out there and just lay it down. And I thought they did a beautiful job, and they commissioned Space Junk.
And I was going to ask you that.
Yep, they commissioned that piece. And, dude, and they were also just so helpful in general, like helping with gear, setting up stuff. It was just unbelievable. So a big shout out to Taylor Davis and Stephen Seymour and Ricky Bracamontes and James Ferris from Lagan Percussion for just being awesome, great musicians and great people.
And I watched some of the, they had been doing some videos like leading up to the concert on, and I saw them on Instagram like after the fact, and they were pretty funny too. Like some of them were, some of them were pretty funny. Like it was cool.
Yeah, totally, man. They're great. I met them at Baylor when I was teaching there.
Oh, with Tom?
With Tom. Yes, with Tom.
Yeah.
And they were great, man. And then who else is left here? Let's see.
Well, I mean, like, Nick and Kat, I think, are the only people that we didn't mention.
Yeah, Nick Stevens and Kat Cole were both production assistants for us. We hired them to help with stuff, and they did above and beyond what they were called to do, you know. They made the whole experience smooth, and they were thinking about things and doing things without even being told to do them. That's the best kind of, you know, that's the best kind of help you can get, is where you don't have to think of every detail. They're doing it for you.
Yeah, I mean, the best kind of concert for a percussionist is the kind of concert where you don't have to move everything all around into the place where you're going to play it. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of, that was really helpful too.
I agree.
That was nice.
Yeah, we had one stage
guys are great.
Set up pretty much. Yeah, they're awesome.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Really great. And I think
you know what else?
That's it.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I think that's it, right? Did we leave anybody else out?
For people, I think that's it. I wanted to talk about how much I love playing on those A&F drum sets though, man. Can you talk about that hookup a little bit? Because those are so cool.
Yes, absolutely. So A&F Drums is based here in Austin, Texas. And I just reached out to them whenever I found out we were playing PASIC, because I knew we needed a lot of drums.
Right.
And they invited me over to their studio. And actually, I think even before that, a long time ago, somebody from the company Instagram messaged me, said, hey, man, I know you're in town. If you ever want to come by, check out drums. And so anyway, we got in touch. I went over. They gave me a tour of their whole facilities. And they're just beautifully made custom drums, man. Some are copper. Some are steel. Some are really interesting sizes, you know?
Yeah, like the bass drum I played on for the couple of the tunes had to be, what, like 24?
Yeah.
24 inch head, but then like it was only maybe like 12 inches deep.
Exactly.
It was really different.
Totally different. Their drums sound great, man. And Chris Mead, who works at A&F Drums, flew to Indianapolis, was teching for us before.
Yeah. He was awesome.
He was tuning drums, was making sure everything was smooth. That was just great, man. They're a great company, and I think they usually deal with people who live mainly in the drum set, pop, rock, jazz world, and not as much with people in the classical world. So I hope that we were able to introduce their drums to sort of a new audience too, you know?
Yeah, I'd be happy to play those again anytime. Those were really nice.
Yeah, and like Evan's drum heads supplied a ton of drum heads for us. Mallet Tech provided a ton of vibraphones, marimbas, glockenspiels. Vic Firth and Zildjian helped immensely. Mallet Lab, Drew Tucker's thing, man. They helped sell, helped us sell merch, and they were so sweet. Meinl Percussion, they have my favorite cajon ever, the jumbo bass cajon.
It's good.
It's a great one. And then Yamaha and DW also assisted with some last minute stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it was so great to have all that brand new, you know, pulling out brand new cymbals, and it just felt I don't think I've ever used like brand new stands before in my whole life. It took me a minute to figure out how to work them. I'm like, why are all these wing nuts are still here? What do I do? That was really fun, and I mean, I definitely would want to make sure I say thank you to you guys, you and Drew and Madeline, for, you know, just first of all making it a thing that we could do and inviting everybody to play, and then sort of just leading us in the spirit of what you guys were thinking about, because it was I think it is a moment that I think nobody up there will ever forget, and I definitely hope that there are more like that in the future with all of us, but even if there never was, that's a thing that'll last forever, I think, in everybody's minds, and it's just so fortunate to be a part of it.
I feel the same way, Aaron. Thanks for joining, and thanks for reading Desiderata. That was amazing.
Oh, I mean, I want to do that more and more. It's so great.
Thanks, man.
Loved it. So, I mean, other than our concert at PASIC, was there anything else that you noticed really liking?
Yeah, there's a kid who was in Vista Ridge High School. All the high schools that played, I thought, were really great. Berkner High School premiered one of my pieces called Patterns, and that was really wonderful. And then Vista Ridge premiered another piece called Make a Joyful Noise. But their whole concert was amazing. And there's a kid named, let me get this right, because I was just texting with his teacher. Let me find him here. Oh, there he is. There's a kid named Glenn Coe, who's a high school kid, shorter than me, like he's small kid. And he was my favorite performer at the whole convention. Like watching him play music was beautiful, man. He was so into it. He was so joyful. He was so happy to be there. And he just crushed it. And I went up afterwards and I gave him a big hug. And I was texting with his teacher and I was like, hey, man, I need this guy's autograph. And he was like, get in line, man. Every time Glenn plays, he steals the show.
That's awesome.
I thought that was really great. So big shout out to the kids at Vista Ridge High School and Berkner High School as well, but especially Glenn for getting me excited and making me want to go give him a big hug afterwards.
That's awesome. Yeah, I really enjoyed seeing Nate Wood play. Nate Wood is not a high school student, but it was also really super motivating. Nate Wood has this project. I don't think you were there, right?
I didn't get to go.
I think I sat with Matt Witten. But Nate Wood plays drums. I knew him from playing drums in Kneebody, which is a band where a lot of those guys started at Eastman. Nate Wood didn't go to Eastman, but that's, I guess we'll forgive him. And so he played, you know, plays great drums, and then he also plays really, really great bass. Like, he gets hired to play bass with, you know, like heavy people, and he's great at guitar, and he's great singer-songwriter. And so he did this thing, has this thing called Four. I think probably people have maybe seen it online, where he just does all of that stuff at once. And honest to God, like, I remember sitting there watching this concert being like, okay, he's definitely the best drummer in the entire room, you know. I mean, like, there were other guys there checking. Like, I saw sat pretty close to Aaron Spears, who's like no slouch in his own right. And Aaron Spears was there checking out Nate Wood, you know. So Nate Wood's doing some stuff on the drums, and then he's playing bass with just one hand, kind of like tapping, like just filthy bass lines. And then he's got all these synthesizers where he's playing all these different synth pads. And then after he played a couple of tunes, he's like, it was funny because one guy was like, yeah, I noticed that you have this microphone on. Are you controlling stuff with your mouth? He's like, no, that's for singing. And I'm going to do that like right now. And then he added singing. And I mean, it was like, and it wasn't like singing, you know, like Twinkle Twinkle Little Star or something. Like, it was all intricate, really difficult stuff. It was just mind-blowing to see somebody do all of that at such a high level at once.
Right.
I mean, as a drum set player, we talk about working on coordination and stuff a lot, but I mean, it's coordination on drums, not like four different instruments.
Well, so, I remember talking to you and you said if that was a band of four people, it would be really impressive, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Even if everybody was playing separate instruments. So
that's awesome, man.
You know, I guess sometimes at PASIC you do get to see things that make you wonder like why you should continue at all with what you're doing. But it was really cool, and he was, you know, happy to talk about it. I keep getting a phone call here that I can't really take right now. You know, he was open to talk, and people asked him questions that I thought were, you know, like some of them were like sort of basic questions, like, you know, how do you do that? Or, you know, like, and he was really, you know, was not condescending about it. He was really happy that people liked it. And, you know, you can tell he's spent all, he said he's basically been practicing for 6 months just working on, you know, these kind of arrangements that he's got. But I think most of it's online. You can do YouTubes, and there's also a record out that you can listen to, but it really does a little bit more to actually be able to see it.
Yeah.
You know, if you can actually look at it, it's pretty cool.
That's awesome, man. I mean, I remember you raving about it. I haven't been able to see it.
Yeah.
I saw the other Nate Smith, right?
Oh yeah. How was that? I wish I could have gone. I
tried to take some video for you, but I was so far in the back, but, it was beautiful. It was really great. He's just a beautiful player, man. Like, he played a lot of delicate, soft stuff really well. I only know his stuff through his band, or the stuff he's done with, is it Wolfpack? Is that right?
Yeah, like the frequent flyer stuff.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
And that stuff's always super groovy, which a lot of what he played was too. But he did a lot of beautiful drumming, and I thought that was really great because there was a lot of young kids there probably wanting him to just lay down sick beats.
Right.
And he did a lot of interesting things too. And I thought that was great.
That's another guy where he's got some really sweet stuff online. I can find it. There's this video where I think he's wearing like a denim jacket. So that's how you know it's the right one. And he's just playing this like pretty simple little groove, but every phrase, it sort of just modifies itself a bit, and it evolves into this just, like, it's just so tasteful. I mean, it's a great thing for somebody if they think drummers can't be melodic, you know, because he's playing just a groove, but there's so much taste to it, and there's so much going on, and he's not, like, I mean, there are parts of it where the chops come out, you know, because he's got, like, just insane right foot, you know, he can play, like, 16th notes at 120 with his right foot on the bass drum, like, no problem.
That's pretty crazy.
But he does it so quietly too on this particular video. Maybe I can find it and you can link to it in the notes to the podcast or something. But yeah, Nate Wood and Nate Smith.
I got it. I also went to a beautiful concert that Megan Arnes and University of Missouri percussion put on, the Imbira Ensemble. They brought in a special guest. I'm going to see if I can pronounce this correctly. Musakiwa Chindoza, I think is his name. And he is a, like, expert Zimbabwe Imbira player. And it was beautiful, man. Like, he was leading the whole audience in songs. It was just a completely different experience than almost anything else at PASIC. I left just feeling just great about life and happy, and it was an awesome concert, so shout out to Megan.
See, man, there again, though, community, right? Like, involving the audience and making people feel good about what they're hearing, mm-hmm. and not just making it about how great you are or anything like that. That's wonderful.
Yeah, it was great, man. A lot of good things, also just good to hang, right?
Oh, yeah.
We went to St. Elmo's, and they gave us the basement cellar room, which was, dude, like right next to the wine cellars, and that's where Peyton Manning signed his football contracts, right?
Yeah, that's so ridiculous.
And then, like, we asked what, like, the cheapest bottle of wine was they had, and they were like, why did we give this room to these guys?
Yeah, you could tell when people started pulling out change for the tip that it wasn't going to go very well. That was a fantastic meal. You know what else I thought, like, underrated meal, but I thought when we ate at that place, Nada, the taco that I had was really excellent. The pork belly taco was A+.
I love Nada. I went there twice, man. It was delicious.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, it was great.
Thanks for inviting me.
No, the first time you weren't there, it was just me and Drew on Tuesday.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay, perfect. That worked out then.
Yeah, we would have invited you.
That was great. And then we also went to the Pacers game. Did you like the Pacers game?
I thought it was fun. Yeah.
It was fun.
I didn't think the basketball played was probably as great as it could have been. It's early in the season.
They were bad.
They were bad. Okay, sorry. See, that's what I mean. I'm too nice.
It was like the teacher league on Friday mornings in the gym here. It was terrible.
You know what my favorite part of that basketball game was? The halftime fifth grade game. They had fifth graders from two different schools in Indianapolis play each other on a professional NBA basketball court, and like they didn't wipe the floors down, so kids were just falling left and right
everywhere.
They were like throwing elbows at each other, and that was actually way more entertaining than the actual NBA
I think they made the same amount of baskets, to be honest. They played the Miami Heat, the Pacers. I still don't know hardly anybody on either team, but that's okay.
Yeah, it was fun.
But that was a fun time, though. Yeah, I had a nice. It was my first NBA game. So
yeah,
and
Chris Jones showed up, which was really cool.
Oh,
came
always
to
good to
us.
See.
Yeah, it
Chris
was awesome.
Jones. Yeah, it was a fun time, man. Eric Forst was there from Messiah College. Mm-hmm. That's another Maine PA buddy. He came along.
Yep, it was great.
It was great, all in all, man. So I was thinking, I wanted to, I made this playlist that I sent to you.
Yeah, I've listened to like four songs.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell people about the playlist that I made, because what happened was I was walking to the convention center from our room, and then I got all the way to the convention center and I forgot my pass to get into the convention. So I had to go all the way back to the room. And so in the meantime, I was listening to some tunes, and so I thought that I just wanted to share the tunes with you, because I thought they were, you know, just kind of good and stuff I was thinking about as we were there. So I'm going to share the playlist with everyone, okay? So
great.
Hiatus Coyote, Building a Ladder, and Molasses. And so if you don't know Hiatus Coyote, that's a great band to check out. Perrin Moss is the drummer. He's from Australia. I think they're all from Australia. But Perrin Moss is, like, really, really somebody who I'm into checking out. He's got this, like, Dilla beats kind of thing, mm-hmm. really solid, where he'll just play, like, a straight groove for a while, and then all of a sudden it's, like, swing for a bar.
Yeah.
It just catches you so off
that's
guard.
That's what Nate Smith was talking about, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was talking a lot, like, about Dilla beats.
That's the popular thing now, right? But Jay Dilla's, like, from way back, like, that's, like, 90s.
Totally.
You know, we're just now catching up. So those tunes are great. And then Pechora, which I don't know how many people know about Pechora or not anymore, but when I was at Eastman doing my jazz degree, Pechora was, like, the best. And they even came to Eastman once. But their drummer is Jim Black, and he's, like, super creative. But Pechora plays music that's like Bulgarian influence. So there's a clarinet player, and a lot of his drumming involves like a doomback instead of a snare drum. But there's an album called A Stereotypical that I think is totally fantastic. So I included the songs Drifting and Bushka Lounge from that record, which I played on a jury once at Eastman, actually.
Excellent. Kind of cool. Did you pass?
I barely passed. And then the last was this artist, Sun Kil Moon, which is like, it was a band at first, but now it's just kind of one guy, singer-songwritery stuff. And the album Benji is something that my pal Luke Norris showed me. And that's the thing that I was trying to say to you. Like, I think if you listen to this record, you would really like it.
Yeah, I actually listened to one of those songs out of the four that I got to listen to. And it was like really haunting and beautiful and like super honest, right?
Yeah. Like, oh yeah.
Like painfully honest in a great way.
Do you remember, was it Carissa or Dogs?
I think it was Carissa.
Yeah, that's a really amazing song. And it's like, he just tells stories. Like, the lyrics are not really like poetic or anything. He just kind of sings stories.
Yes, that's exactly right.
But when you get a chance to check out Dogs, that's like pretty honest and amazing in a different way.
Okay.
And I'm not going to spoil it for you, but it's worth a listen when no one else is around.
That's awesome, man. Thanks for putting that together for us. You sent that to me and Maddie and I forget who else.
Yeah, Drew probably. I mean, playlists are important, you know, like I think that's another way that we can. Part of what makes, I think, what we do together as musicians work so well is because I think, and this is something Dave Chisholm's talked about a bunch too, like if people have common touchstones, like common things that they've listened to or are familiar with, then a lot of times it seems like the music comes together more easily because we've got these musical reference points.
Makes sense.
You know, and like I know like you are a big Radiohead guy and I've like a lot of Radiohead stuff too, and so I think sometimes that's a touchstone that we can go to and be like, yeah, we know what we're going for here, even when we don't have to speak it in words.
Sort of like part of our musical vocabularies.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That makes a lot of sense. Cool. Thank you, Aaron. You do a much better job at this than I do. I don't listen to enough new music, or I don't always go and seek out new music as much as I should. I mean, I try. But I want to be better at that, you know. You know what song you really turned me on to was the Destiny's Child. What's that song called?
Yeah. There's so many.
It's like one of their main, as the kids would say, bops.
I mean, like you got Bills, Bills, Bills. No. You got Say My Name. That's probably the best.
The percussion writing in Say My Name is pretty genius, right?
Right, with like the one little belchry.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's worth a listen for sure, man. I love that tune. There's a really good cover that somebody does, like a bass cover of it. And this guy's playing the bass line and then starts going further and further with it. And he's like just slaying that. It's a really cool video.
That's awesome. Like, I'm not, like in the cello band, we play a few covers, you know, and that's not something that I've always wanted to do. But with the Big Trouble, it might actually be interesting now that we have a vocalist to do a few like interesting covers, you know, like that would be one that I would love to do, a Say My Name. And like we did the Ariana Grande one in the Pacific lobby. Cool. I thought that was kind of cool, actually.
I thought it was good.
I didn't know it was Ariana Grande when I heard Madeline sing it on Instagram. I was just like, whoa, that's a cool song. We should do that. And Drew was like, dude, that's Ariana Grande.
That's kind of like how I wrote Desiderata, right? It's like the same thing. Like a lot of people were like, man, I really love that poem that you wrote. I was like, God, if only I could write something that intelligent.
Yeah, for those of you listening, that was written by American writer Max Ehrman in 1927, Desiderata. Yeah. I tried to say that. I feel like I did.
I feel like you did too, maybe, but you know, it doesn't always happen. Hey, man, I want to tell you before we're done, this coffee that's really good here, this is called Ruby Coffee. It's from Wisconsin, but you can get it online. And when I ordered it online, it shipped like it had been roasted like 2 days before I got it. So it's definitely worth checking out. Ruby Coffee.
Okay.
From Wisconsin.
Thank you.
It's really good.
I will.
You got any good ones going these days for you?
Well, I just had a pour over at the local coffee shop yesterday. The shop's called Fleet. And it was a Kenyan coffee by Madcap, and they're a pretty popular roaster now. I think they're doing a lot of stuff both nationally and internationally. But it was really delicious. And then my mother-in-law and both my in-laws just got back from a trip to San Francisco, and they brought me a little bag of like Guatemalan Costa Rica blend from I think it's Cibo, which is a coffee shop that they love to go to in San Francisco. And I usually don't like the Central American stuff, but that's your thing, right? That's your favorite?
I think that's my favorite, like the El Salvadors and the Guatemalas are my favorite.
But this one was really delicious. It was awesome, super easy to drink and smooth. I'm trying to be more open to trying a lot of different kinds of coffee. Do you have a least favorite, Aaron, if there was like a type of coffee that you didn't really want to have?
I don't know. I mean, I think they're all different, yeah. You know? I've tried some of the ones from like India and kind of some of the like Thai kind of things, uh-huh. Sometimes are like a little peppery sometimes, yeah. Which I don't know, it's kind of hard to get into if you're not in the right mood for it, but no, man. I mean, I like, it's just like having different flavors of anything else, you know, like, you know, sometimes you have a great Reese's cup and sometimes you have a great Snickers bar, and they're both good in their own way.
And I'm with you.
I mean, I thought that the coffee I had from that Bee Coffee place in Indianapolis was amazing too.
Yeah, I agree. It was really delicious. That's been my go-to spot for the last couple years. Yeah, shout out to
they were great.
Bee Coffee.
Yeah.
All right, man. Are you teaching soon?
I think so. I think we got another couple hours here till it's gonna be Thanksgiving vacation though. So that's gonna be
cool.
Oh,
great.
What are you doing? You guys doing any Thanksgiving stuff?
We're going to Rockport, Texas.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Amanda's grandmother's home was pretty much destroyed in the hurricane.
Yeah.
But it got rebuilt and it's ready to go. It's ready to host its first Thanksgiving.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Are your parents going to?
They are. Yeah. They go every year. My mom's bringing tamales, I'm sure. That's a thing, bro. Like
yeah.
With the Mexican community here in South Texas, like we'll have turkey. Yeah. But we'll have just as many tamales. You know
That's
what I mean?
Great.
Yeah, it's great. It's beautiful.
And Henry's going to have his first Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
That's going to be cool, man.
I know. I'm excited for that. And then, you know, Christmas and Hanukkah are around the corner.
Right.
And we celebrate both.
As you should.
As we should, right?
That's right.
So, yeah, that'll be fun for Henry and to see him, like, around all the Christmas lights. And I think he's going to love it, man.
Oh, yeah. My kids are Keely just turned 4 while I was at PASIC, actually.
I know. Happy birthday, Keely.
And that was really cool. And then Owen's going to turn 2 when it gets closer to Christmas. And they're super into Christmas now. So, like, we already went out on a drive to see Christmas lights. And, like, we saw not that many, but they're already stoked on Christmas.
Beautiful.
Which is really exciting.
Have they given
so
their...
we'll get the tree up this weekend, you know.
Have they given their list to Santa yet?
Not yet, actually, no. It's weird because their birthdays are right around this time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like hard to not overload everybody with a ton of presents.
Sure.
So we might do a little traveling instead and try to make it so that it's not as much about having stuff, you know.
Perfect.
And a little bit more about just like spending time with people that are great.
Yep.
But, you know, I'm sure they'll get some things too because that's just how it goes.
Yeah.
But I liked. Do you remember? Did George tell you the story about Isaiah?
No.
It was like,
oh yeah.
It was like pretty funny about how he wanted all this stuff for Christmas, and George was like, "You haven't really been that good this year, so maybe you shouldn't get anything." That was pretty funny.
Didn't you call Isaiah from PASIC? How old is Isaiah, by the way?
I think he's six. No, I bet you he's 8. I think he's 8.
What did you say to him on the phone?
I pretended that I just saw Santa in Indianapolis and that we were talking about how he was behaving. He totally believed me, too, which was the best part. He was like, oh, wait, you did? I was like, oh, yeah, we did. That's the best, man. I think, like, part of like this whole thing about all of us having kids that's so funny is just like being able to mess with the kids. Like I read books to the kids every night, and I always, and this is like so childish and I'm slightly embarrassed to say this, but I like add in things about where like that they farted and stuff in the books, you know, and just like casually, and just try to see how many I can get through. And it's hilarious. I mean, like, you should definitely try this.
Okay,
because,
will.
You know, it's harmless, but it's just, I don't know, to me, I just think it's the funniest. I know not everyone thinks farts are funny, but I definitely am in the farts are funny camp. And I think that just adds to the books, you know. Some of them you've read 100 times, right? So it's like nice to have a little bit
variation.
Of something change. Yeah, a little different.
That's awesome, so. Man.
Anyway.
Well, send Sarah and the kiddos our love,
for
man.
Sure. I will. And likewise to you guys. I'm excited that we're most likely going to all be coming down to Texas now, though, to see you guys. It's going to be what the doctor ordered.
I think
for
so.
Sure.
Yeah. Bozeman's hosting his summer camp for the first time.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
June in Texas. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start training right now, like just turning the heat up to 90 every day in my house. Start doing like sprints around the living room so
Aaron,
I can survive
there's,
the heat.
There's nothing you can do. Laredo heat in the summer is brutal. And you're just going to have to like stay inside.
I know. I feel like my Eskimo blood just can't keep up.
Yeah, it's tough, man.
This is too much. It's hot. I'll just drink some waters. All right. Well, listen, man, I should probably get going, but I'm glad we got to talk about PASIC. It was a great experience. I can't wait till the video comes out, and I want to see more of those pictures.
Yeah, as soon as we get stuff, man, I'll let you know. And thanks to you, Aaron, and to everybody else who joined. Thanks to Maddie and to Drew for just being great collaborators and creating a really great experience for everyone. It was really special, and it means a lot, Aaron, that you, again, were able to, we could share that moment together, you know?
No question. Yeah, I wouldn't have missed it.
Thanks, man.
And, I mean, thanks for everybody who came to the gig, too. You know,
absolutely.
That was a cool thing. Hopefully people got something out of it, because I know we had a great time.
Yeah. All right, brother.
All right, dude. Catch up with you soon,
it's
then.
Good to see you, man. We'll get this podcast
likewise.
Out, right?
Yeah, I hope we can get it out soon.
Yeah, let's do it this week. I'll make it happen.
All right. You got it.
All right,
it.
Man. Love you. Talk
right,
to you later.
Bro. All right, same.
Bye.